Do you want to break away from your addiction to drugs and alcohol? Sunrise Detox can help. Call 888-44-DETOX. That's 888-44-DETOX. Everybody, welcome once again to our radio show. This is Scott Clark with you on Steppin' Out. We call it Steppin' Out. Well, you're going to find out. Each and every week we come here at this time on this station, you can tune in and hear us talk about reality radio at its finest, because it is here that we speak the truth about honesty, about addiction, and about recovery. We have happy endings on this show because the people we have on this show have suffered, have been to the abyss, and have climbed out and have come back and are living each day one day at a time, whether it be from alcohol, from other drugs. And we like to say about alcohol that it is a drug, contrary to many beliefs in this country and around the world. It is a drug. It does affect us. It's a substance that can be abused. And we are here to talk about not only that, but also we've talked about smoking, about overeating, about undereating, about things that affect us. They are addictions. We can't stop these things that we do, and they affect us in a negative way. That's what this show is about. Again, my name is Scott Clark, and we have a special guest today by the name of Teddy M. Hey, Teddy, how are you?
Yeah, good evening. How you doing, Scott?
Good to see you, Teddy.
Thank you.
Before we get started, we'd like to give a shout-out to all of our good friends and our people on American Forces Radio, our soldiers, our sailors, our Marines, and our airmen who help and do keep us safe each and every day, and who listen to us around the world on American Forces Radio as we emanate from our New York broadcast studios here across the globe and around the world. Say hey to American Forces Radio. Now, to Teddy. Teddy M. is here to talk about his addiction. About his addiction to, Teddy?
Well, my addiction to just about everything that was out on the market at the time.
Bring it down the line?
I can do that. Bring it down the line, yeah.
We usually begin, Teddy, at the beginning. What are your beginnings?
Well, you know, I grew up in a neighborhood right under the Triborough Bridge, Astoria,
New York City.
Astoria, Queens. My family moved from Hell's Kitchen over there, and blue collar neighborhood. You know,
I'd have thought you were from the Midwest with that
Midwest accent, yeah. And you know, it was a blue collar area. You know, it was fine. We were talking, some of the fellows and us were talking before we came up, and the amazing part was that, you know, all the things that I can remember and not remember, and most of us could, was I like a lot of things. Spaghetti, ice cream, steak. I can never remember the first time I had any of them. But I can remember the first time I drank in the street. And I was 13, schoolyard, and a bottle of Four Roses. Now, that's about 50-something years ago.
Of all the things that you can love, the spaghetti of ice cream, and my God, ice cream is good, too.
Yeah, I love it.
But of all those things, the one thing that sticks in your mind is that shot of alcohol that first came.
Absolutely.
Why is that?
I have no idea. Because I think alcohol was like a rite of passage in the neighborhood. Everybody drank. Not to abuse, but everybody drank. It's the blue-collar disease. You go on a job in most places and you don't drink, they look at you like there's something wrong with you. You go into the utility company, you go into the transit, you go into the cops, you go into the firemen, you go into any of those type of jobs. And you don't drink, people look like there's something wrong. You're not to be trusted. So when you started to drink, it was like, you know, you were doing what generations before you did.
You're in.
Yep, you're in. You know, it was an amazing thing.
Did you, before, I mean, taking a drink, we've had so many people in here who have talked about having their first drink at 3 years of age, of 6 years of age. But 13, that's you're up there a little bit when it comes to people who first had their drinks. Of course, there are people who had their first drinks at 25, too, maybe even 30. Yeah. But before you had the drink, Did you feel it was a drinking in your family? Did you have family of it?
You know, I had a taste of alcohol before I had that drink. You know, okay. I could have a taste of beer at the house. My father, let me take a sip. I can remember saying that, you know, you can have a sip, you know. Mm. But I remember alcohol in my household. I didn't have an abusive household. I did not have an alcoholic mother and father. It's throughout my family. But I can remember parties at the house. There was never no trouble, you know, stuff like that going on or atrocities. It just didn't happen. Mm-hmm. And to me, alcohol, every time I seen everybody drinking, they were having a good time. It was New Year's Eve. And I grew up in an apartment house. All the neighbors came in. There wasn't a problem. I didn't see any down effects of that. And I had tasted it before. But I can remember how that affected me. Years, I didn't realize that at the time. And I didn't like the taste of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't even remember if I liked what it did to me, but it must have because it came back.
And you had no feelings of being lesser than or better than or whatever when you would, because I remember when I was a kid, before I had a drink, and my first drink was at age 3, and I remember it like it was yesterday, like mm-hmm. you did. But I was like at the life of the party, at that party. It was a very memorable time. But I remember during the time before I started drinking in earnest, though, I never felt exactly even with everyone. I was either better than or less than or never just the same. Did you feel that at all?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I never felt like I was belong. I was always on the outside looking in. I was never there. I don't think that changed with my first drink, but I got to tell you, I felt like I belonged that night. I felt like these were all older guys. And at 13 years old, we went from that schoolyard to a bar. And I got served, and I felt that I had arrived, and I was the same as everybody else.
You know, isn't that amazing that finally when I get that drink in earnest that I think of, not the sip, but that drink in earnest that I feel, it's okay now.
It definitely is something that affects me psychologically as well as physically.
So just about entering your teenage years, you pick up that drink. Was it the beginning of a progression that started there?
Absolutely.
And how quickly did that progression take place?
Well, the progression took place. It started to take place. I didn't drink daily, of course, but we started drinking on a fairly regular basis towards the weekends. Drugs were just coming into the neighborhood. We started to experiment a little bit. There wasn't a lot of drugs. This is 1956, 1957. So there wasn't a lot of drugs, but guys were starting to drink cough medicine. And it got to a point it was easier to drink 4 ounces of cough medicine and go home than it would be go home drunk at 14. Mm. I could get by with that. They didn't know what the signs were. And that's what started me going to a different path. So my drinking went on, and it's an old phrase, I never got in trouble every time I drank, but every time I got in trouble, I was drinking.
Mm-hmm.
And it went on. It started to work its way up. Mm-hmm. And eventually what happened was that I left school early, started playing hooky, not going to school, and what did you do when you didn't go to school? You played hooky, you drank, you hustled up some beers, you did this, you did that, and went swimming down the river. So it seemed like a great life. It just didn't seem like I was heading in any really destructive path.
Did you think drinking was a part of that when you started dropping out, or do you think that was just part of your life and drinking was along for the ride?
That's what I thought. I didn't think I was not going to school to drink, but when I didn't go to school to hang out and be part of the rest, we drank or started to experiment with some drugs, mainly cough medicine. It wasn't long before that cough medicine went to heroin. There wasn't no marijuana in the neighborhood. There wasn't anything like that.
No cocaine. That all came later. Marijuana basically came, well, I guess it's... It was strewn, I guess, in California. I think in the early 60s it was around, but hell, it was around in the 40s and the 50s as well, right?
Well,
from what I hear.
Yeah, that's true. Well, this is about 1950.
I know it was around in the 70s.
Yeah, that's right.
From what I know.
They say if you remember the '70s, you weren't there.
Yeah.
But I don't remember people. I mean, I'm sure they did, but it didn't. All of a sudden, the guys were fooling around with heroin, and one of the things that people that have an addiction or had an addiction with heroin is that the reason heroin is so bad is because it's so good. It's an absolute euphoria. It's absolutely, you're gone. And I went from a fat kid that everybody in the neighborhood beat up. By the time I was 16, I was sentenced to a penitentiary term in New York City Reformatory, they used to call it. It was New York, it was Rikers Island. You used to do time there.
Mm-hmm.
And I was running with a crowd that was way above my head. It really was.
You don't look like a guy who was getting beaten up all the time. You look like a tough guy.
Well, I was a fat kid at 13, and everybody in the neighborhood picked me up. They used to call kids from other neighborhoods. You didn't beat up Teddy M? Come on over here. You know, and did it. And then some guy told me one time, pick up something and hit someone. And that's what I did, and that changed my life. And then I got involved with those drugs, and I got to tell you, I was with a crowd that of 55 or 60 guys that hung out in the same area. 80% of them were dead before they were 30.
Mm. But some would look at it and go, okay, he was drinking and doing cough medicine, then went into heroin. How can you be tough and do all those things?
How can you be tough and do all those things?
How can you get tough when you're doing all this stuff?
Oh, yeah. You better get tough or people are going to take everything off you. I also went up to Stillman's, some local bookmakers when I was 14, and I went crazy for a year. Sent me up to Stillman's. They're going to put me in a Golden Glove. So I went up there. I had a trainer for 10 months and continued the behavior I was doing, drinking and doing cough medicine, but I was getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning and running. And
you can do so many things when you're still doing the drinking and the drugging and everything else.
Absolutely.
And Teddy M is here to tell us about that and is living proof that you can be a tough guy, you can get tough, and also be a big boxer. You can do all things you want to do and still be addicted. And it can still take you places you do not want to go, but you do. I'm Scott Clark. Welcome to Stephanaut Radio. We'll be right back. Are you ready to break the cycle of substance abuse? Sunrise Detox can help. Sunrise Detox offers an individual recovery plan to help overcome addiction. And we make the recovery process comfortable by offering gourmet meals and flat-screen TVs and many other amenities, all in a beautiful mountain setting in Sterling, New Jersey. Call 888-44-DETOX for Detox with Dignity. That's 888-44-DETOX. What could be better than a day of golf with friends on a par 72 championship golf course overlooking the Hudson River? How about that all the proceeds from this event will benefit the men in crisis at St. Christopher's Inn, a residential shelter and alcohol and substance abuse treatment center in Garrison, New York? Well, on Monday, September 13th, please join the board of directors, friends, benefactors, and staff of St. Christopher's Inn, a ministry of the Franciscan Friars of the Atonement, at the Garrison Golf Club on Route 9 in Garrison, New York. For more information on how to register to play or to become a sponsor, please visit our website at www.stchristophersinn-graymore.org. That's stchristophersinn-graymore.org. Or call the development office at 845-335-1081. That's 845-335-1081. Be sure to ask about the $1 million hole-in-one event.
Drinking again and thinking of when you loved me. I'm having a few and wishing that you were here.
Welcome back to Stepping Out Radio. Scott Clark with you, along with our special guest, Teddy M, talking about his addiction and his eventual recovery, his experience, his strength, and his hope on this day here on Stepping Out.
If you think that you may have a problem with what we've been talking about a problem with alcohol or drugs or something else, whatever it may be, if you're doing something and you can't quit it and it's affecting your life in a negative way, if you have that problem, any problem like that, we know you might be able to get a first step for getting help, and that is at our website, and that's www.12stepmeeting.com. That's www.12stepmeeting.com. When you're there, you can sign up for our free newsletter or drop us a line. We'd love to hear from you. Now, we're loving to hear from Teddy M., who has a wonderful story to expound here on Stepping Out Radio. When last we left...
Yes, I will run right through it because usually I don't talk too much about drug addiction because I'm in a different program. But I went through prisons, hospitals. There was no treatment centers for alcohol or drugs at that time. There was no detoxes.
Now, you were doing cough syrup, and then that led to heroin, correct?
Yep.
Do you remember that bridge?
Somebody saying, why are you going to bother with this? You got to get online. You got to wait. You can't get the... They used to started putting restrictions on cough medicine. Try this.
And online meaning not online. You had to stand online.
You had
right?
to stand online. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I just said, okay. You know, I belong to the Why Not Club all my life. Okay. Why not?
Why not?
Yeah. So...
Did you snort it first? Or?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And did that lead to shooting it?
Almost immediately.
Really?
Almost immediately. And I'm a kid that when they gave the first polio shots out, they had to hold me down. I was like, oh. But I got over that quick enough. And I ran for the next years in and out of jail, which saved my life. I came out of the tombs in 1962, the end of 1962, on a heroin run that I was 149 pounds. And I got on a train and I...
What happens in a heroin run?
Okay. Well, you manage to keep going long enough before getting arrested. That's what it is. At that time, you didn't go into treatment because there was no treatment. The price of your daily life goes up. The things you have to do to support that habit go up to get more reckless. And... You risk your life more and more.
Did you get meaner when you were looking and couldn't cop? Or
oh, absolutely. When I got sick, I was going to stop being sick at all cost. When I started to get sick and get withdrawal, I would get straight at any cost. I would take anything off anybody. It didn't matter to me. And that's just the way it was.
To get the fix.
Absolutely. And now you're putting yourself also to get the money. You get the money. You go back in the street. Now you have to find somebody to score off of, and you don't know what the heck you're getting. You don't know what the heck you're getting. So you're putting a lot of reliance on a lot of different things, which leads you into a life that you can lose your life different ways. If I'm walking up as an Irish American kid to 118th Street and Park Avenue, and I score and I get dummy bags, I have to go back and make a scene. If I don't go back and make a scene, then everybody's going to do that to me. It's not the most best idea in the world for me to go back into Spanish Harlem and start to drag somebody out of a house, but that's what I would have to do.
It's different, but it's the same. As you're talking and speaking of your experience in the 50s, the late 50s, early
60s. Late 50s, early 60s.
But it really, there is relationship now today.
Oh, absolutely.
Close to us on Long Island specifically, but not only just Long Island. They get
everywhere.
Maybe the pub about it, but all across this country.
Absolutely.
There's a lot of heroin going around now it's become a resurgence. And do you see this happening? What do you think?
Do you see
similarities that you'd had when you were in the 50s?
Oh, absolutely. Except that there is treatment now. Mm-hmm. I'm not trying to say it's better now. It's just as bad if you're addicted. It's just as hard to get off of. But there is treatment now. But there, heroin has never went away. Mm. It's always been underlying. It's always been there. But all of a sudden, a good bag of heroin in 1959, 60, 61, 60, it was 13%. It was a really good bag of heroin. Today, they're 80%, 75%. That's how people started to get hooked on it. Go ahead, you can't get hooked on this. To college kids, you only have to snort it. It's so pure that they're getting strung out snorting it, and they're overdosing, snorting it. And then it's
today,
not long. Then it's not long until you start to shoot it.
Mm.
So there is absolutely no difference in the addiction itself.
We have people who are listening, young people, I'm sure, who are listening at this time and who are may have experimented in snorting some heroin because it's becoming prominent in this society again. And like you said, it never left. But the prominence becomes, I don't know, does it become more prominent when middle class and upper middle class start using it as opposed to people who maybe aren't upper middle class and it's not affecting society as a whole, as they say, until it really does?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now all of a sudden.
Who cares about the kids in the projects, right?
That's right.
It's always quiet when the kids in the projects are doing whatever, but when it starts hitting our our legitimate, middle class to upper middle class, now it's a problem.
When a guy comes home from IBM and his kid is in college and he's paying that tuition, and then they go up and find out the kid is strung out and failed all the subjects or his subjects, I can give you 100 cases. I'm retired 5 years, but the 7-8 years before I retired, we started to see an insurgence in the people who came for employees' assistance coming in on heroin. Crack had went out, heroin came in. It's almost like a marketing scheme.
Mm-hmm.
And heroin came in, and it came in. It's in a big way again.
Hmm.
So it's. So
what do you say to a person who may be experimenting with it right now? Because you've been there, done that. We're talking about decades later, but it's the same drug, and it's the same people that you did it, and now some of these people are doing it. They did it for fun, and they did it. They're doing it for fun. What do you say to them?
Well, I got to tell you, I wish I could say something that have an impact to have somebody stop. But I personally don't think you can scare an addict or an alcoholic. But it's going to kill you. And if you're shooting it, you're going to end up with the bug. You're going to end up with the virus. No two ways about it. Don't talk about the needle exchange. You're going to be with somebody. You're going to have to get off. And they're going to say, I got a set of gimmicks. And you're going to get off. And you are going to come up HIV positive. No two ways about it. And I think that if you're using, you should go visit a ward that treats people with AIDS. Maybe that'll have an impact. Your dream will become your nightmare. No two ways about it. It's going to get you.
These are the words of experience. These are the words of Teddy M. This is Steppin' Out Radio. I'm Scott Clark. Thanks for joining us. We'll be right back with more of Teddy's story to the depths that he went to and how he climbed out one day at a time. We'll be right back. Are you an addiction professional interested in what's shaping the future of addiction treatment programs? Well, join us at the National Conference on Addiction Disorders this September in Washington, D.C. You can learn from key industry leaders, including Dr. Carlo DiClemente, Dr. Wesley Clark, Carl Erickson, and David Smith. Visit NCAD10.com. That's NCAD10.com to learn more. Are you ready to break the cycle of substance abuse? Sunrise Detox can help. Sunrise Detox offers an individual recovery plan to help overcome addiction. And we make the recovery process comfortable by offering gourmet meals and flat screen TVs and many other amenities, all in a beautiful mountain setting in Sterling, New Jersey. Call 888-44-DETOX for Detox with Dignity. That's 888-44-DETOX. Welcome back to Steppin' Out Radio. Scott Clark with you. We are listening to and talking with Teddy M., who is sharing with us his experience, his strength, and his hope for all of us who suffer from addiction, whether it be heroin, whether it be drinking, whether it be drugging in other forms, whatever it may be. We there are those who do suffer from addiction. Some get help, some don't. Too many do not. Teddy is one gentleman who has gotten help, though. But before we get to your help, let's talk about where this disease took you, this addiction took you from heroin. I know we started talking about heroin in the 50s and the 60s as opposed to today, and there's so many similarities. But back to your story, and from the cough syrup to heroin to I would do anything to get my next fix. Where were you at that time? What was happening? How old were you? And where did that take you at that point?
Well, I was at that point for a while, and I come out of, I got locked up. I was in the tombs for 3 days.
Are you in your 20s?
I'm just 20 years old. 19, just the end of 19, 20 years old. I kicked the habit. I was 149 pounds. My mother and father moved out of the city. My brother's a chemical engineer. He was running a plant up outside of Peekskill. So I went up, got on a train, got up there, and ended up in my mom's house to let the wrinkles out of my belly. Stayed there for a while. And in my staying there, I ended up meeting a girl while I was up there. I didn't do too much dating. You know, if I was with a woman when I was using the heroin, she had to be able to hustle at least in the morning to get enough money for both of us to have our nose stop running. And I took her out. And I said to my brother, where should I take her? He said, take her to the bar. Have a couple of beers. Now, I drank all the way along through this, but not much.
Right.
And I took her to a bar and had a couple of beers. And I had had a couple of four or five beers. And the next thing I knew, I was the king of Siam. You know, I had this little country girl. And before I knew it, long story short, I ended up with this woman. And my drinking at that time started. I had no job experience. I had nothing. I was 20 years old. So through the advice of somebody, I wanted to get a job where I didn't have to explain where I was for 3 years, long period of my time. So I went to school and I became a hairdresser. As you can see, a guy built like me should be a hairdresser.
Looks like one, yeah.
Yeah,
Teddy.
Right. Yeah. But there was no background checks when you went in for a job. And I ended up doing fairly well. I ended up marrying this girl, doing fairly well.
Teddy's the kind of guy who looks like he sounds.
Yeah.
Okay, just to give you an idea for all of
you have all these
listening on radio. He looks like he sounds, but he has eyes that also sparkle. And it's, go ahead.
So I ended up marrying this girl. I ended up owning a shop in Lower Westchester. Life was good, you know what I mean?
When you said you kicked, though, back when you were 20, and then you said you finally kicked, was there a white light? What happened?
No. Actually, what happened is that when I met this girl and I stayed up there, and I managed to stay away 4 or 5 months, and I took up the slack with drinking, that I said, I don't want to go back there.
Because you knew it was a problem.
Oh, I knew that I couldn't go to my neighborhood. I didn't go to my neighborhood of Manhattan for 7 years. I stayed away from that neighborhood. People, places, and things I knew about right away. I knew that there's no such thing as me going back and refer to it as dibbing and dabbing. No way.
Well, some people have that same experience, and it's not bad, but they still stayed there because they wanted that. They wanted to keep getting the hit.
Well,
wanted to get out of it.
I'll tell you, I wanted to get out of that, and I picked up alcohol. Alcohol picked up the slack, and I stayed away from all the people I knew, and I started a whole new life. And I look back now, and I think I don't want to get to the end of my story, but I got some stuff in there that I believe was in there that I didn't know about. And I married that woman. We had 3 children every 2 years. It's the Catholic rhythm method, you know, every 2 years.
That's a maximum, I think.
Yeah, had a baby. And life was pretty good. I got to tell you, I had always had this, but I carried that mentality that I had learned all my life. Before, I carried it forever. You know something? I didn't argue with a guy. If it was an argument, I'd punch him. Period. It was bigger than me. I'd pick something. And it, you know, just as a hairdresser, that didn't wash at all. You know what I mean? But I just had that, and what I realize today is that self-centered fear that gripped my life, all my life. Because I still now felt like I didn't belong. I still didn't belong. I felt like I belonged with my wife and my kids, but I didn't belong in the world. I was different. And I went along. I ended up buying, owning a shop, buying half of a shop, doing this, doing that. I left jobs all the time. About 7 years after that, I went in. I told my wife, I don't want to do this no more. I told the guy in the shop, you can pay me off. And I was only getting about $4,000 for my interest in the shop. And I went into construction. And that was a pattern. And I went into construction. My drinking picked up. You know, these guys drank more. As a hairdresser, I didn't drink during a week.
A little wine at 4 o'clock, wasn't it?
No, I never drank a little wine. You know? It was going to be a little whiskey and a little beer, but...
in the salon.
In the salon.
I'd have loved to have seen that beauty show.
But it was...
this is Teddy M., who went from the beauty shop to the construction crew and probably liked that move as well.
Oh,
but
yeah.
It went to beer. And but we're still talking about drinking now as a replacement. It's still... The addiction's still alive and well. We'll talk about where that took Teddy M. when we return on Stepping Out. We'll be right back. Addiction is a disease that affects families, not just individuals. Now, here to talk about how addiction affects every generation is Dr. Joseph Lee from Hazelden. Dr. Lee is an expert in addiction medicine. Dr. Lee, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me. You know, addiction is an illness that affects individuals and families alike. Many families in our country have suffered silently and privately with addiction as it ravages one generation after another. Stigma about mental health and chemical dependency, personal shame, and morally misplaced judgments have made it difficult for families to reach out to each other. It's now time to break that silence. Many of you listening have family members, friends, or loved ones who have or are currently struggling with addiction. Some of you may be in recovery yourselves. You may be unsure about how to broach the topic of addiction with your loved ones. For example, if you're a parent, how do you bring up the topic of drugs and alcohol with your child, especially if you've used before? At Hazelden, we believe that honest and open communication is the best way to treat and prevent addiction. For the past 60 years, we've been offering Americans a road to lasting and sustainable recovery. There is hope in recovery, but first we must decide to open a dialogue with each other.
Four Generations Overcoming Addiction, created by Hazelden, will help your family begin its own path to recovery from addiction by encouraging honest and open dialogue among the generations. To learn more, go to www.fourgenerations.org. That's FOURgenerations.org.
No one plans to take the path that brings.
Back on Stepping Out Radio with Teddy M. Scott Clark with you, and now Teddy M., you're on the construction crew. You got a wife, got three kids, got the drinking going on. What happened?
Well, I got to tell you, it progressed to a point that I was drinking daily, but so was everybody else I seen on the job. What I didn't see a lot was sometimes I would be in the bar when everybody else went home. Alcohol, almost from the beginning for me, kept me back from ever getting the rewards of my work. And I was always a worker. I went on to a lot of different jobs. I went from construction. I went on to train and tractor trailer drivers for United Parcel. I trained myself how to drive a tractor trailer. A guy loaned me a cab every Saturday, Sunday morning, and into a yard where they had all the trucks, and I would hook up and taught myself how to drive.
Mm-hmm.
I left that job. I went, I made wallpaper, and all of them have a big story involved. We don't have enough time. We'd have to make this a series. It just got worse and worse and worse and worse. It just got worse and worse. And in 1975, I was working in a wallpaper plant in Queens. After I walked out of a job that was a really very good low management job at United Parcel, every job I had, I was very successful at. They loved me. They didn't want me to go. But I ended up being introduced to AA that year in 1975.
Mm-hmm.
And quickly how that happened is I was with a guy. We went hunting. We put the guns away. We sat down and drank all weekend and had diet pills so we didn't have to go to sleep. And towards the end of the 3 days, the guy's house we were in, I woke up after finally falling asleep after 3 days. And he was dragging his fiance through the house in a rage. And I woke up with a good friend of mine that just passed away. And he was a union official for, he was a union official.
Okay.
And I said to him, "Friend, you know something? I think I have a drinking problem." It was like somebody else said the words. He said, "Why do you think that?" I said, "Because sometimes I get drunk when I don't want to. I don't want to stop getting drunk. I just don't want these surprise drunks when I get my paycheck, when I make a promise to my wife and the kids." So he said, "I'll call somebody for you in the transit."
Mm.
That's where he was. So he called up a guy, and I went to see him the following day when we got home. And the guy said to me, "What happens to you when you drink?" And I thought he was putting me on. I said, "What happens when you drink, buddy?" He said, "I get drunk." I said, "Well, that's happened to me. Isn't that why we drink? I don't drink because I'd rather have a malted if I wanted something that tasted good." He said, "You ever hear of Alcoholics Anonymous?" I said, "I've seen it in the movies." He said, "Would you go to a meeting with somebody?" I said, "Yeah." A guy come to pick me up at my house that night, and this was, everybody was hippies then. You know, it was great. Nobody wore underwear. And I lived in a house, a second story of a two-family house. Guy came to the door. I opened the door. Red hair, blue eyes, clean, pressed. I haven't shaved. I haven't showered in a little while. I was in the throes of real alcoholism, daily drinking, morning drinking. My kids came to the steps, and I kept telling them, "Get inside, get inside." I didn't want them to see what real people look like.
Yeah, and I'm embarrassed.
Yeah. And he took me to a meeting, and I didn't like it. Somebody else called up the next night to me and picked me up. And then the third night, I finally told the guy, I said, "Is there anybody else that you're going to go visit? Am I the only guy that has a drinking problem in Yonkers?" And he took me to a meeting, and I ran into a couple of guys from Upper Manhattan, from Dyckman Street, where Matt comes from. And one of them I was incarcerated with. And he talked to me, and it made sense. And I started going to AA, and I went to AA for almost 11 months, and I didn't drink, and our lives got better.
Mm.
But I was smoking grass. Nobody talked about it, so I didn't talk about it. So eventually I picked up a drink again, and I couldn't put it down for the next 10 years, and it became terrible. I couldn't work. I was taking 5 or 6 months off at a time. Of course, being
and my background. And it wasn't drinking. You weren't drinking, but you were using something, a substance that was still being used, that you were still using.
Absolutely.
Whether it's alcohol,
absolutely,
or another drug.
I was addicted to alcohol. If I stopped drinking, I started to detox in 3 or 4 hours. I started to get the shakes, and I didn't even know that. I had a lifetime of alcoholism and addiction, and I didn't know I was detoxing. And I was taking 3 or 4 months at a time off. I took off for 5.5 months on a phony case where I left the bus and called it compensation, and I went out on compensation. And I came back to work, and I couldn't go to work second. I couldn't make 2 days in a row. And that was the old thing that I remember as a kid. Drink all you want, but if you miss work, there's something wrong.
Right.
So I called this guy back up that first gave me the interview in the transit. And I was working for the transit that time, and he said, "You can come out here, and I'll put you in detox. You have to notify the company." I said, "No, I can't do that." My wife said she was leaving me. My oldest boy was living in an abandoned building in Yonkers with his own alcoholism. My daughter was 15 years old. She was a year clean and sober in a daytime program. And I reached the end. She left, took my youngest son to go do laundry, and I walked in the bedroom and fell on the floor and said, "God, please help me. Please help me. I can't take this anymore." And I haven't had a drink since I said that prayer. And I didn't remember that till my friend John told me at a meeting about 9 months later. And I got up, I passed out, and I got up. My wife said, "Well, what are you doing?" She was very angry. She said, "What are you doing?" I said, "I'm going to an AA meeting." And I went to an AA meeting that night. And I ran into some guys, and the one guy came up and said, "You look like crap." I was highly insulted. And gave me a half a cup of coffee because he said I couldn't hold a whole cup. I was shaking so bad.
Mm.
I should have been in detox. And I went through that meeting. I don't know what was said, but all I knew was that my life was on the line. But somehow I knew it was on the line. And I said to him, the guys later, I said, are you guys going to AA tomorrow night? And could I go with you?
One day at a time. This is Teddy M's story. We'll talk about what his life is like today, what his recovery has been like when we come back on Stepping Out. We'll be right back.
What could be better than a day of golf with friends on a par 72 championship golf course overlooking the Hudson River? How about that all the proceeds from this event will benefit the men in crisis at St. Christopher's Inn, a residential shelter and alcohol and substance abuse treatment center in Garrison, New York? Well, on Monday, September 13th, please join the board of directors, friends, benefactors, and staff of St. Christopher's Inn, a ministry of the Franciscan Friars of the Atonement, at the Garrison Golf Club on Route 9 in Garrison, New York. For more information on how to register to play or to become a sponsor, please visit our website at www.stchristophersinn-graymore.org. That's stchristophersinn-graymore.org. Or call the development office at 845-335-1081. That's 845-335-1081. Be sure to ask about the $1 million hole-in-one event. Are you ready to break the cycle of substance abuse? Sunrise Detox can help. Sunrise Detox offers an individual recovery plan to help overcome addiction. And we make the recovery process comfortable by offering gourmet meals and flat-screen TVs and many other amenities, all in a beautiful mountain setting in Sterling, New Jersey. Call 888-44-DETOX for Detox with Dignity. That's 888-44-DETOX. Sing women, sing for the year, sing for the left, and sing for the tear. Sing a women just for today, maybe tomorrow the good Lord will take you away.
Welcome back once again to Stepping Out Radio. Scott Clark along with you and with our special guest, Teddy M. One take doesn't really take, maybe it does, maybe it doesn't. Sometimes it takes more, sometimes it takes what it takes. In fact, it does take what it takes. You went into the program once and it didn't work, you kept using, but can you tell me what it was like that made it different this time?
Well, I gotta really say that not only was I so scared and disgusted with my life and what I became, that I really think that prayer brought my higher power into my life. And I started going to AA. I went to AA every night. I seen these guys. A big part for me was asking those guys, can I go with you? I wouldn't ask anybody for nothing. I got incarcerated and didn't have cigarettes. I stopped smoking. I mean, that's the attitude I had. And I ran with these guys. And then I ended up with a group on 201st Street and Bainbridge Avenue. And my friend John was there, and he became my sponsor. And I had guys just lead me through.
I asked for help,
and I was given more help than I could possibly manage. And I have to tell you, I mean, I don't shine people off by trying to be, say I'm a mug. I'm a fairly intelligent guy. I've done very well when I applied myself. All of a sudden, I'm going to be 25 years sober in September. I went from no bank account, nothing going for me. I became the clinical director of the largest EAP service in New York City, the New York City Transit side, on the union side. I went to school. I did my homework. I did everything I was supposed to do, all with the help of AA. I put some legwork in, but they certainly led me along. They told me when I go to bed at night, while I'm down there, put my shoes under the bed, sit on your knees and hit your knees and say your prayers. And I did. And keep it simple. Just say, God, thank you that I didn't get drunk today.
What do you say to people who say, well, here comes that God thing now?
I tell you, I'll be honest with you, I talk to higher power stuff when I've been around a few months, a couple of weeks, three or four, until they start to settle in because nobody wants to hear. But I'm not ashamed of that anymore because this is a spiritual program. And if you are scared of the God word, well, keep drinking. You'll find out it's not that scary. You know what I mean? So I lead a very successful life. I'm retired. I'm not a home run hitter when it comes to income every year, but I certainly don't eat out of cow food cans. I have friends around me that love me, and I love them. More important, I can feel love today. I couldn't feel it for years. And I was married 40 years when I lost my wife. walked to work and dropped dead. She was a nurse, worked in an Alzheimer's unit. She got gypped. She was just about ready to retire. Right now, I'm moving. I sold my place. My daughter, I'm staying in my grandson's bed in her two-bedroom apartment. And I get up to see this little kid running over, waking me up, saying, Pop, Pop, you have to get up. You have someplace to go. Never saw me drunk. Doesn't know what I am, angry and crazy. So I got more out of putting a drink down than I ever imagined.
Teddy, thank you for coming on our show and sharing your story, your life, on Steppin' Out Radio. I'm Scott Clark with Teddy M. We'll see you next time, one day at a time.
Are you an addiction professional interested in what's shaping the future of addiction treatment programs? Well, join us at the National Conference on Addiction Disorders this September in Washington, D.C. You can learn from key industry leaders, including Dr. Carlo DiClemente, Dr. Wesley Clark, Carl Erickson, and David Smith. Visit NCAD10.com. That's NCAD10.com to learn more.